Greetings. Welcome to Stardate Susitna. I'm Kathleen Fleming. In this edition, we'll talk about the harvest moon, a couple morning planets, a minor meteor shower, and then my interview with Chris Mannix about his eclipse viewing experience 6 weeks ago. I like to start with the moon. Last week, La Luna was in the southerly winter constellations, and this week she climbs, like the sun in spring, up through Aquarius and Pisces. Full moon is Thursday morning, October 5th. Late as it is, this is indeed the full moon closest to the fall equinox, and therefore this is the harvest moon. And like all full moons, this one rises at the same time and in the opposite direction as the sun sets. Sunset almost due west, a couple weeks after the equinox, so the full moon Wednesday evening will be pretty much rising due east. The harvest moon provides extra light to extend work of the harvest, but more than that, the big moon rises about the same time each night, rather than the average of 50 minutes later. It's a long and complicated explanation, and I think you'd rather hear more of Chris's eclipse experience than me explaining a difficult concept. Two more astro events, the close pairing of Venus and Mars in the mornings this week. I think 7 a.m. They'll be barely over due east, within nautical twilight. Brilliant Venus is falling closer to the sun, while Mars is climbing away from El Sol. Their closest separation is Thursday morning, October 5th. The goddess of love, so much brighter than the god of war. As it should be. Also, the Draconids meteor shower peaks this coming week. This is not a major shower, plus the bright waning gibbous moon will obliterate any faint shooting stars. However, if you are looking up and north on a clear night from dusk to dawn, and you see a relatively slow meteor streaking away from the head of Draco, the dragon, which is near the bright star Vega, which never sets at this latitude, you may have seen one of the dragon's tears. I'm not actually recommending making a special effort to see the few that might show up this weekend. All right, current news out of the way. Let's continue our celebration of that totality awesome solar eclipse. So many Alaskans made the effort to join friends and family outside for what's widely considered the most spectacular, predictable natural event you could ever witness. All right, I've got Chris Mannix on the phone, and Chris, I understand that you made plans and went down to see the total solar eclipse. Where were you?
I was in Corvallis, Oregon. I was in that same area in 1979 for total eclipse, but it was dark and cloudy and rainy, so I missed that one.
The probability of clouds was a little bit higher there on the west side of the Cascades, but I think everybody was pretty happy and got to see it this time, right?
It was beautiful weather. You know, there was a little angst in the days leading up to it because of the marine clouds that sometimes drift over the Willamette Valley in the morning, but they did not make an appearance on eclipse day.
Yay.
It was a bluebird day.
Oh, that's great. And who were you with when you were viewing the eclipse?
I was with mostly family members, my sister Teresa and her husband, Casey from Seattle, their two daughters, my sister Rosemary and her husband Peter. Rosemary lives in Corvallis, and their daughter Helen, and then a childhood buddy drove up from the Bay Area and with his kids. So it was like a mini reunion.
What a great opportunity for that. So you had mentioned that there was some additional activity at the airport. Describe what you saw.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had scouted out our viewing location a couple of days prior to the eclipse, and it was on a tall hill on the outskirts of Corvallis with a good view from the Coast Range looking to the west, big sweep to the south through the Willamette Valley and over to the Cascades. And part of that view was the normally sleepy Corvallis Airport. My brother-in-law, Peter, said he rarely sees an airplane there. As the eclipse approached, private jets started landing there, some of them quite large. just before totality, we counted 26 jets lined up on the taxiway with people in lawn chairs, you know, out there on the grass, obviously there for eclipse viewing.
Wow, so they didn't have to hassle with the automobile traffic.
Just the air traffic. Mm-hmm. And then not long after the eclipse was over, the planes rolled down onto the runway and took off to, you know, wherever they came from.
Mm-hmm. Now, before and during the eclipse, you noticed some interesting phenomena. Can you talk about that?
Before the eclipse, it was hot. You know, it was probably 80, 85 degrees. We had gotten up early, about 6:30, and trekked into our site, and it was a little chilly, but as the day progressed, it warmed up to about 80. And then as the eclipse progressed, the temperature dropped, and I'm going to say 20 degrees.
Hmm.
And the quality of the light became really bizarre. It was like a twilight kind of light, except, you know, it's coming from almost overhead. And it's never seen that kind of light. That was really totally bizarre and unexpected. Mm-hmm. And then just before and after the eclipse, there were these things that we were told they're shadow snakes. You call them shadow bands.
Mm-hmm. I've heard
and
it referred to as shadow bands.
Flat surfaces and on the trees, there were these alternating bands of shadow and light that were just vibrating around like crazy. I mean, everywhere you look, there was just this weird vibrating shadow and light pattern on the ground.
When the sun is just a really thin crescent?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I haven't heard a good explanation for why that occurs, but nevertheless, there it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was really cool.
And then what about the streetlights?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, at some point, we noticed that all the streetlights came on in town. It was pretty cool. There were about 300 people scattered across this hillside. And, of course, everyone was in a great mood and, you know, just tense with anticipation. And the moment of totality, everyone erupted in a spontaneous cheer and whoops and hollers. And it was quite something.
Mm, you just can't help yourself. It's just extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. Mm-hmm. I've seen partial eclipses, but this is a whole different kettle of fish.
Mm.
There's no comparison between the two.
Mm.
And not having seen one before, it was, I didn't know what to expect, but it was wild. It was great. I had the spotting scope and binoculars, and as soon as totality happened, I passed my binocs around so people could look at the corona. And I got my spotting scope directly on the sun, and at 30 power, it was amazing to take a look at the corona.
Could you see detail in the sun's atmosphere in the corona, or did you see prominences along the edge?
I don't know what you mean by prominences, but it looked like there were these giant solar flares.
Mm-hmm.
You know, circling the sun.
Like orange or reddish, leaping out of the sun and looping back to it right at the edge?
Boy, you nailed it.
Yeah. Loops of solar material, yeah.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. And I don't know how many millions of miles or whatever it's blasting out there, but it's got to be quite distant.
And then some people in your party had experiences with some traffic afterwards, I understand.
Oh, yeah, they were optimistic. In Benton County, Oregon, I think they predicted 400,000 people, and they were worried about everything. But anyway, it didn't seem that crowded, so a couple of folks departed soon after the eclipse, and two of them headed back to Seattle, and it took them 8.5 hours as opposed to the normal 4.
Mm.
And then my buddy John headed south on I-5 to head back to the Bay Area, and it took him 2 hours to go 40 miles.
Oh my gosh.
at which point he turned around and came back and spent another night.
Oh, good choice.
Yeah.
And so, Chris, you're pretty into this. You had a good experience. You want to see some more.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to see some more. And I think all of us want to see some more. Mm-hmm. No one in the group had seen an eclipse before, and everyone wants to see another one.
It was more spectacular than you were expecting.
What can you say about a total eclipse? It definitely exceeded expectations. It was mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And so much so that, you know, I have the next four of them on my calendar.
Oh, very good. Are you going to join me in South America?
South America, Mexico, Egypt, Nome.
Mm-hmm. So, God, we've spawned another eclipse chaser. I get it.
I'm particularly interested in seeing how the one in 2033 out in Nome pans out. I'd love to go out there at the end of March. I'm going to start training a dog team. Maybe I'll run the Iditarod and make it out there.
Well, I'm glad you had such a great experience, Chris, and thanks for letting me interview for Stardate Susitna.
Okay, cool, Kathleen. See you around.
Yeah, see you. Thanks, Chris.
Bye. Bye.
Although I was with a small group on a budget trip around southern Africa, mostly tent camping, for the June 21, 2001 solar eclipse, and none of us thought ourselves vain, the 16 or so eclipse chasers in the minibus sang that song more than once. Anyway, apologies to Carly Simon for using bits of her song, but with Chris's story of the private jets flying into Corvallis, I couldn't resist. And that's it for this edition of Stardate Susitna. I have more people with ties to Talkeetna to interview for future programs. This week, watch the harvest moon rise opposite the setting sun at about the same time each evening as it races northward along the eastern horizon. Watch for Venus and Mars in the east as dawn begins. They are closest Thursday morning. And if you see shooting stars up and to the north next weekend, they are probably draconids. More leaves now on the ground than in the trees sure changes things. The clear skies are offering us quite a few aurora opportunities, so have a great weekend. Keep looking up.